there's so many things about where people don't know about miscarriages, and that way you don't talk to people about it because you're scared of losing the baby.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Okay, let's do it. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan, here with Ryan and Matt from the Lily Mae Foundation. Hey, up.
Buenos dias.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
You're good. You're right there, Matthew?
Hello.
Joining us in the studio for this episode, his name is Sam, Sam Houghton. Now, we've met before. Once, haven't we? We were the Lily Mae Foundation football team. I think it was about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
We were trying to figure out which game it was by which member of the team got carried off and taken to hospital.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because there's always one every game. And on that particular game, it was Ryan's dad.
Yes, it was.
Was that the one when he lasted 20... He ran on
60 seconds.
I passed him the ball, turned away because I passed him the ball with no one on him. Next thing I know, he's on the floor.
He ran on the pitch and ruptured his Achilles running on.
You broke a rib, didn't you, though?
I did. I broke a rib.
Of course. Someone always breaks something.
Yeah, I did.
At the Lily Mae Foundation games. If you'd like to play, why don't you get in touch?
Yeah, I did. I broke a rib.
So, yeah, that's about the extent of my footballing career recently.
Okay. And what do you do for a living?
So I've got my own business.
Okay.
Called Stone Sense. We do stone worktops.
Stone Sense?
Stone Sense.
Right, okay.
Yes.
So the reason that you're here, you've got your story, and there's quite a lot to unpack in the journey that you, and it's your wife, isn't it, Paula?
Yeah, myself, my wife, Paula, yeah.
How long have you and Paula been together for before we move on? Because I just want to say, we always ask the guys this, and we always get a range of answers. Some of them are close.
The question you asked me 5 minutes ago.
I'm annoyed I did that now.
Yeah. And the answer, I've still been sitting here thinking I can't actually remember exactly the time.
When's your anniversary?
The anniversary is the 25th of June.
Okay,
I know that. Okay.
What year?
We've been married. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah,
no, he's got his fingers out.
Yeah.
We need an abacus in the studio.
Talk about stitch up. We've been married. We're married.
Good. Yeah.
We're married. Yeah.
and it's definitely my best marriage so far.
Excellent. Wow. I definitely think you've talked your way out of that telling off.
Yeah, definitely.
So you came into contact with Lily Mae Foundation because you and Paul have suffered. Well, it's more than one loss, isn't it? There's a lot. Can you give us a background on the losses then that you and Paula have suffered?
Yeah, and I mean, the real sad state of affairs is I genuinely sort of block a lot of it out. And before I came, I sort of said to Paula, I was like, you're going to just have to write it all down for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, I genuinely like can't remember all of it. I'll run you through I've got something called a balance translocation, which is a chromosome condition.
Right.
Which basically means in order to get pregnant, we can get pregnant, but basically I don't always produce the perfect embryos.
Okay.
So, we don't make the perfect embryos. So, we need to go down the route of having IVF.
Okay.
To do that. So we did 10 rounds of IVF. Which sort of took a while. We had to do a treatment called PGD, IVF, which is where they basically take the embryo away and then they do genetic testing on it to see if you've basically got a balanced embryo and whether it's going to survive.
Right.
So we went to Wolsgrave Hospital. I already knew about that I'd got this because I'd got two children from a previous marriage.
Okay.
Which fortunately... were completely natural. Now I realise how much of a miracle that was.
Mm.
But I had suffered three miscarriages with my previous wife. I knew about the fact I'd got this translocation, but didn't have to do the route of IVF, luckily. So then when, obviously, Paula's second wife and we entered into starting to have a baby. And it's something that I discussed with her right at the start, that I said, you know, she hadn't got children and we were... definitely thinking that it was something that we wanted to do. I had to be open and honest and say, this is not maybe going to be an easy route, but genuinely didn't realise it was going to be as tough as it has been. We entered into the route of...
Why would you think? I mean, it's the naivety, isn't it? A word that comes up a lot with the guests as well.
I mean, I say it to so many people now. I'm like, you know, you go through school and they're like, you know, Yeah. Have sex. You're gonna get pregnant.
I've said that before. It is. It's almost fed to you that simply.
Fairy tale, isn't it?
The thing is, if they actually turn around in school and said, you need to have protection because of things like sexually transmitted infections, and not just solely focus it on you will get pregnant, then actually, in terms of the naivety of pregnancy, of the understanding of pregnancy and stuff, I think people would actually take more of a,
It's almost like it's true. Encourages much practice because it's not easy. You know, it's how they package that up to a 15-year-old, but I don't know. We went down the journey of having IVF, which we knew we were going to have to do. Fortunately, we got referred to a clinic in Oxford called Oxford Fertility. Yeah. We had 10 rounds and we did have a successful IVF baby, which was Toby. Unfortunately, neonatal death. He died at 27 weeks. He was born, but only lasted a short period of time. We lost Toby at and we were at Walsgrave Hospital, and that's where I got introduced to Lily May, and obviously the bereavement boxes.
Yeah.
And I can honestly and openly say it saved us. You know, I couldn't process this form of loss.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong, we'd lost family members, but I'd never experienced losing somebody. You know, that's going to be so close to you that you just didn't expect. You know, obviously I'd had two children before. I knew what it was like pregnancy. I knew there was risks and all sorts of things. But then we were going through this journey about being pregnant and looking forward to it. And we had planned everything. I mean, Paula's quite impatient. So we'd got everything you could possibly think of, she won't mind me saying that, by the way. It's a beautiful trait that she has. It means I'm not a very good timekeeper, so it's perfect.
Right, okay. Is that why she's quite impatient?
Exactly. She's
where's perfect. Sam? He's 8 seconds late again.
Exactly. No.
But obviously, on a serious note, and I'm picking up on something that you said, it's because it's been mentioned a few times. Ryan summed it up perfectly on a previous episode, because obviously with a child, and not only is it your child, but at the start, grief is grief, but and I'm talking about in relation to, like, I don't know, grandparents and it feels a bit mean to say because they've lived, but it's more expected, isn't it? Because it's, it might be happening.
And you've got so many fantastic memories. You've got things that you enjoy together. You can talk about them and you can, you know, you've got pictures, you've got experiences, you've got everything. Mm. And for me, it was one, I was losing a child, which was just, and there's a moment that I will never forget for the rest of my life where, because Paula is by cesarean section, so obviously, and Paula was, had to be put under, and then they delivered Toby, took him out into the side room, and he got delivered in a bag because he was 27 weeks. Mm. Took him out into the side room, and still at this stage, they were still pretty hopeful that he was going to be all right because we'd got a heartbeat. And then to tell me that he'd gone, and then I had to then go and tell Paula, and that was like, I was absolutely in tears. And I remember you obviously cried as a kid, but as an adult, don't feel like I'd cried a lot. And I was just sobbing my eyes out. I couldn't physically stand up.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you want us to tell her? And I was like, I knew that I needed to tell her. But it was like, how am I going to do that? You know, and it was like, and I remember telling her and saying the words, he's gone. Which, to be fair, I still find a bit hard. And she was amazing. Like, literally, she was like, it's going to be all right. And I was like,
wow.
And it, since she's sort of said about it, and she went, I just knew in that moment I had to be strong. And I was just like, how have you managed to do that? You know, she was literally, she'd just come round from being put under, having a cesarean section. And they genuinely, like, there was a few complications as well where she wasn't sure whether she was going to survive and all sorts of things. And then she was just
really?
Yeah, there's loads of... And so we sort of went through, and obviously you get taken through and then you're in recovery and then they do bring the box through and they explain to you about the charity. Obviously, I'd never heard about the charity and the amazing work that you guys do. And it was like I couldn't process it. I was just like, I couldn't think about
where do you start?
Yeah, to start. But then, as the sort of, I think it was then the next day, and then they were able to, you're able to do different things where you can dress your baby, you can do the really the beautiful sort of footprints, and you can have photos, and having like a kit where you've got everything there to do. I was really like, I don't know whether I want to do this. And Paula really encouraged me to do it. And if we hadn't had all of those things and those moments where you're encouraged to do these things, to have the memories. And it's like, I've got an album on my phone, and I never told anybody this, but...
You have now.
Well, yeah, I know. since... I'm sort of skipping ahead.
But no, go for it.
We have fortunately had a live baby now, and we've got 11-week-old Rory.
11-week-old
Rory. Yeah.
Congratulations. Is Rory sleeping well? Because you're looking very fresh.
Yeah, well, we alternate nights. So yeah, right. Last night wasn't my night. Right. Yeah,
I was going to actually take you back a little bit in the conversation where you pre-birth and stuff and going through the IVF process, because I think... That's another area that we touch upon with our guests and our listeners, in that, and since I've come into this world of working for Lily May, I've had a lot of education on the IVF side.
Okay.
Because obviously me and Crystal have never gone through that side of it. Mm. But obviously I've now sat with clients who've gone through that and sadly lost. And the big thing for me that's come across from these people that I've worked with is that the psychological side of IVF like is so undervalued.
I mean, the thing for me that struck me is IVF for me was just like, oh, well, it's just going to work.
Right.
It's IVF. And particularly in our circumstances, because it was just, I had a chromosome condition, but it was just about, we create enough embryos and test them and you'll get some good ones out of it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it.
What is the percentage likelihood of it working?
But the problem is in there, all the different clinics will have different sections.
Yeah, but is there a ballpark?
Rates and it depends upon the case, to be honest. Okay. I don't actually know the figures.
No, I wouldn't have a clue.
That's why I'm just interested. Yeah, yeah. Because, like I said, to go to psychologically face IVF and then go through and then for this to sadly happen as well. I know a loss is sad anyway, but once you go, do you know what I mean?
Like, I think my sister's on like a third or fourth round at the minute, and my sister in Australia.
But also to go through it 10 times.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I'm going to address the elephant in the room. It's not cheap.
Right.
Yeah. Because you get one or two, three or something like that.
We were very fortunate. Now, because I got an unbalanced translocation, we actually qualified for some funding for the first three rounds. So, which normally we wouldn't have because I'd got children. But because of we were a new relationship, and because fortunately, and it goes very much on area as well. So
in particular,
funding is based upon different counties or different hospitals. They have different funding criterias. But PGD, like balanced translocation PGD testing falls under national funding.
Right.
So as long as I hadn't within our relationship had a successful pregnancy without IVF, we qualified for the first three rounds.
Okay.
And then we then had to basically pay for the rest. Yeah.
So Toby, this was in 2021.
Yeah.
So still not really all that long ago. Five and a bit years. Matt, I want to bring you in here. Do you mind me asking, Sam, with Toby, when you say how long Toby lived for?
46 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities, I remember, between with Matt and Crystal with Callie, because it was 27 minutes. And Matt also had to break the news, which I'm not sure if you guys have spoken.
We haven't really sort of...
And when you mentioned it, I thought it's something, because Matt... So you've both been in that situation where you've had to walk in and tell your wife their baby's not there.
Crystal was under general anaesthetic, so she knew going in that something wasn't quite right with Callie because they said, right, emergency C-section because we need to get you up. but when I was obviously told and Crystal was asleep, so I had to... That's why I'm nodding my head when you said it, because it's like... And it's interesting what you said about the question, what you asked about... Like, do you want us to tell her?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you probably felt the same. I was like, well, no, I'm a husband. I there's no one what am I doing? Like letting someone else do that? Like yeah. I felt like, and it wasn't even the sense of being like brave or anything like that. It was just all like, no, I have to tell her.
Yeah.
Because I'm her husband. You know, and it, yeah, so yeah, I'm right there with you on that. That's a real moment of kind of, you know, it's just something you don't need think you're going to deliver.
Oh no, absolutely. You know, it's just yeah.
Did you know what you were going to say when you before you walked in the room, or did you just come out?
Well, mine was a bit preempted, which is the really tough moment. One of the toughest moments for me was, and this is why, because
I can't imagine it.
I know that Crystal probably didn't know exactly what happened because she wrote, and this is what then moved on to her having all her panic attacks when we got home and stuff, because every time she woke up from a sleep, she was right back in the room to where she'd been. And she, as she came, kind of rolled over and in pain, she said, like, "Where's our baby? Bring me my baby." And then, sorry. <It's okay. laughs> Then I had to then say, she's gone, you know? So, and at that moment is just something you can't, you just can't, but it's like, it's like being delivered the moment, you know, when the doctors do, like, it's that moment, isn't it? Everyone's got that moment that they remember clearly. Mm. So, yeah.
Thank you, Matt. Sorry, I know. Sometimes I realise I'm just asking a question like it's the most casual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you selfish bastard. Yeah.
So this was also in COVID, again, wasn't it? We've had a lot of chats with people who've... What was your experience of that like? Because obviously no one knew what the hell they were doing. You had people telling you one thing and then not doing it themselves. And some of the stories about whether the dads who've... while they're losing their baby are not even allowed in the hospital. What was your experience?
Yeah, it was... I mean, I was allowed there all the time, fortunately.
Yeah. So they didn't... But, for as long as you wanted, you could just be by inside.
Yeah, I was allowed, but nobody else. Literally, we had very limited family that could come. I
think it was 2020, was it, Sam? You're...
2021. Sorry, I'm awful with years. I'm probably going to... March 19.
March 2021.
So that was normal COVID.
So we were still under restriction.
It was the second lockdown, wasn't it? 2021 was second.
That's right. When the kids went back after in January, didn't they? And they closed schools again, didn't they? Okay.
We were on holiday in Thailand, and and then we'd literally come back. We were at a wedding in Thailand. We'd come back. We weren't sure.
During COVID.
We weren't going to go.
Yeah.
Because it was right at the start.
Right.
And then literally we came back and then everything had locked down. It was the most bizarre thing ever.
Were you in Thailand when Paula started feeling something was wrong?
She got sort of signs of preeclampsia.
Oh wow.
And then it was actually horrific because our plane got cancelled as well. So then we're at a wedding and then our plane got cancelled. So then the night of the wedding, we were trying to organise a different flights and we were in Koh Samui, so there was no issues in Koh Samui. And then we got a connecting flight to Bangkok and it was like the world had ended. Everyone was in bio suits. There
carnage,
was
like
absolute carnage, yeah.
That's bio suits, you know, they bring the bio suits out.
Yeah. Oh, and I remember we were running around because everyone had told us about hand gels. They were like, "You can't get any hand gel anywhere." So we were running around Bangkok Airport trying to get hand gels to take home, literally from these like beauty stores and everything. It was really, really bizarre.
I remember some of the images coming out from that part of the world during the start of COVID, and it was just like just spraying down the streets, weren't they? Like this mad. Yeah. It was honestly like something.
Mental time. Mental.
Some doomsday movie mental. Beginning, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you got back to the UK and then what was it? Straight to hospital to check?
No. We got checked out and she was sort of okay. They just said, it's potential signs of preeclampsia. So we'll monitor if you're it. And then literally a few days later, she got awful back pain, was straight into Warwick A&E. Warwick Labour Ward. And her blood pressure was through the roof. Then they took her in and then, that's when they were monitoring the baby and then they were really concerned.
Had Paula had any children before? Because I know so this was her first experience of pregnancy.
Yeah, we hadn't, obviously we'd had the losses from, but we hadn't had any other before. So we'd had sort of unsuccessful IVFs, but obviously they don't go down as miscarriages or anything.
Yeah, but mentally,
she hadn't been there before.
How was she through all this?
Yeah, I mean, she was amazing. You know, amazingly brave. And it was a bit touch and go because they were so worried. They weren't sure whether they wanted to transfer us to Coventry Hospital.
Yeah.
Because they were concerned because he was 27 weeks that they couldn't deliver.
Yeah.
But then they were worried about her health and transferring her. So there was a lot of touch and go in whether we were doing that. And then they then decided to transfer her. And then we got to Coventry Hospital and they were like, you shouldn't have been transferred. And yeah, it was all just a bit of a... Yeah,
I think they'd
just,
phone each other.
Especially with preeclampsia as well, because you can literally turn bang like that.
Oh, really?
Eclampsia is the word for fit.
So,
pre-eclampsia is pre-fit.
Yeah.
So when, for instance, you were saying there about her blood pressure being through the roof and what have you, if that brings on a fit as she's being transported, then it kills her and the baby.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So you've been through a lot.
I mean, well, that to be honest, that was just the start. So we lost Toby. So he was an IVF baby, and then because we can get pregnant naturally, it is very much a lottery for us about to do my chromosome condition. We then actually conceived naturally.
Was this a considered decision, which is like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go again.
There was obviously there's financial decisions. There was also the stress and the other thing with IVF is the amount of stuff that your partner has to go through because ultimately they're having constant injections. You know, there's so much
the physical
down.
Side.
So it takes over your life, doesn't it?
Massively. I remember, you know, you're having to get taught how to do an injection.
Mm.
And then, you know, how you have to draw up these injections, and there's multiple ones throughout the day. And obviously it's, you know, it plays havoc with their hormones, so you put weight on.
It's just not what you want to be doing,
all these
it?
Sorts of things. And then obviously at the same time, you don't want to talk about it. The whole sort of, don't speak about trying to get pregnant because ultimately people are going to ask about it. And our mentality was, we don't really want to tell anyone because they're just going to constantly ask. So we won't tell anyone. We only told like really close people. Okay.
Was this putting pressure on you two as a couple at the time?
Oh, massively. Absolutely massively. Yeah.
And how did you handle that?
We did a bit of counselling with Ryan and with Amy. And then there was a counsellor that we used through the IVF clinic as well that we did together.
It's worth doing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
The amount of times we've heard people go, I wish I'd done it sooner. In fact, Matt said that himself.
Yeah.
It was 6 years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's funny now because Paula started doing acupuncture.
Get me started on that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we're big advocates for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's transfer. Well, I wasn't. I was like, is that stick a few pins?
Yeah, exactly.
What's that going to be?
My guy's stuck in pins, charged me 30 quid. I seen him reading The Sun through the opposite. I just pissed off for half an hour. But I could stick knives in myself and read a paper. And
stick it's the
So anyway. So yeah, big advert. Okay. So
yeah, and part of that with the particular acupuncture, I don't know if they're called acupuncturists or...
Yeah.
Is it was like therapy as well, because she'd just talk to you and talk about what was going on, but that's how Paula managed it. It was like her acupuncturist was a therapist at the same time.
Okay, yeah.
And she, through all of our journey, she was constantly had that. Now, funnily enough,
interesting,
I've started having acupuncture only this, well, last
where
year.
Where do you have it?
It's at a clinic in Stratford.
No, I mean, whereabouts?
Oh, sorry.
It depends on where, what you're having it for, doesn't it?
So what they do is they feel your pulses within your body and they can put it in all different areas. It might not be, like, you say, oh, you got a bad back. They don't just put it in your back. They might put it in your forehead. Like, they put it in your...
Like Pinhead out of Hellraiser or whatever that movie is.
yeah, literally. They put it in your forehead, they put it in your hands, put it in your legs, put it in your back, put it in your toes.
You've never had it, right?
I've had it, yeah.
And
I had a bad shoulder. I had it literally, from my head down to my foot, literally in it.
Yeah,
Crystal's had it. She had it after we lost Callie.
Right.
Well. I had it where they attach little electrodes as well to the one on my shoulder.
Yeah. Paula would say to me, it's like a type of therapy.
Yeah, okay.
It is a type of therapy because she would talk to her acupuncturist like a therapist.
Acupuncture therapy, yeah.
At the same time. So that really helped her.
Okay.
I, typical man just bottled it up.
Yeah.
And another thing that...
Did it come out in any way? Because, you know, you can't bottle it up forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We would argue all the time. Mm. But the other thing that is really... I'm almost ashamed to say this... Because I'd got two children already, it was like this was Paula's journey, and I was just sort of...
That's mad, isn't it?
I was just there to support her. And it was like, so obviously I was upset, and Toby, that was
like a detachment,
but it was like sort of after that, it was like, well, I could have given up. I was like, you know, I've got two children already, and you know, I see them all the time. Paula's their stepmom, you know, but
I can understand why the brain would process.
And genuinely, up until the point, and I still haven't even said half the story really, but up until the point where I started going in my head, thinking, no, this is our journey together, and that I need to be in this, I need to know everything about it, I need to learn everything.
Yeah.
As Paula, then we had a successful...
Does Paula know you felt that way?
She does now.
Yeah. Is that part of the counselling?
No, to be honest, it's since... I was going to talk about it, but she's written a book.
Yeah.
So since she asked me to write something in her journey within her book, I sort of told her about it then.
Wow, okay.
How did she take that? Like,
I think she maybe sort of guessed a little bit.
Yeah.
It was only up until, obviously, now we've managed to have a successful pregnancy. And, well, sorry, we'd had successful pregnancies, but what I mean is, we've got a baby.
Yeah. Rory, isn't it?
Yeah, that Rory. And that I'd sort of been able to go, you know, I was invested in it. And I might as well tell you the sort of bit, but at the point where I got to the point where it wasn't working, so I'll quickly summarise because I need to explain the next bit of it. But yeah, so we then had a stillbirth, Oliver. Who was naturally, but he unfortunately 19 weeks, which was down to my chromosomes, which we realised was a problem.
This was after...
This was after Toby. Then we had another round of IVF, which implanted. Then Paula had an ectopic pregnancy. So she had to have one of her tubes removed. So then obviously that reduced the chances of getting pregnant a little bit. Then following that, we then had five further miscarriages. Which two were IVF, three were natural. So it then became that we were on this sort of, it was just, the worst thing about it is we were just processing loss of a miscarriage, just like...
One after the other.
Yeah, one after the other. And I got to that stage where I was just like, I'm almost processing it too well. Because I'm not in this, I'm not, and I sort of subconsciously thought, is it because I'm not in it? I don't believe as well. I want it, but I'm not like.
It's a defense mechanism, a subconscious defense mechanism.
I thought, is this fate just telling me, well, you're not in it? So if you're not in it, it's not going to work.
Did you want it to hit you, or did you feel like it should be like? Because we hear about guilt and those sort of things coming up a lot. Just to sort of like peel back the layers of how really where your mental state was.
Yeah, and I did feel a little bit, you know, it's kind of my fault at times because obviously I'm the one with the balanced translocation. Mm. I've already got children and my wife, who I love, and it was something that she wanted so much. And then we would argue, and it would be like, you know, do you really want this? And I'd say, yeah, obviously I would say yes, and I want it. But in the back of my mind, sometimes I'd be like, if she says we'll give up now, then that'll be it. But I think we probably wouldn't be together if we'd given up now, I think. But this switch turned in my head. And we'd been looking at trying surrogates from doing IVF surrogate. They told us about it at the IVF clinic. So I was like, and Paula, a consultant had asked us about it previously. And I've gone, absolutely not. I'm not having somebody else's, essentially somebody else's sperm that we're going to use.
Yeah.
And
so there was never that conversation to be had about.
And to be fair, Paula said, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. But obviously then we'd gone so far, so many losses.
Yeah.
And I thought, I need to do this. I need to now man up and just go, this is so important, Paula.
Yeah.
And we went down the route. We genuinely tried a sperm donor.
Okay.
Paid for it, did all the IVF, and it didn't work. Literally didn't work with IVF, sperm donor. It didn't implant, and the pregnancy, it didn't survive. And we were like, what?
Do you ever question like what have you done to deserve? Because you've had like all of these things one after another stacking up. The reason I'm asking you that is because it's something that does get brought up a lot before. It's like Matt referred to it in the way that only Matt can. He questions every shitty decision he made in his life, leading up to things like, is it some kind of like weird, whatever your beliefs are, way of the world payback or for something?
No, I've never thought that.
Mm.
I thought we were very unlucky, but okay. I wouldn't say I'm not spiritual, but I do sometimes. I believe in like fate a little bit, and that,
exactly.
That manifesting
exactly.
stuff.
Yeah,
and if you don't believe something's going to happen,
law of attraction kind of thing.
Yeah, and sort of going, well, if you really want something, and if you don't 100% believe that you're going to do it or it's going to happen,
yeah,
well, don't be upset if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're not invested. You know, it's like
you can't win the lottery without buying a ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so when sort of that mindset changed, I can't remember exactly the differences when all the different times, but we had another miscarriage because we tried again naturally, and then we were sat with a nurse that we'd seen through the Tommy's clinic at Hospital, a lady called Nikki, who does all the initial scans, and we'd seen her loads, and she'd been part of our journey, and we generally, Paula said to her, and we went, are we just wasting the hospital's time here? Are we getting to the point where you're almost going to say you can't continue? And she was like, absolutely not, do not think like that. And then we talked about IVF and we talked about getting pregnant naturally, and it was like, okay, what's the chances? And we actually probably worked out that the chances of getting pregnant naturally were probably about as much as our chances of going down the route of IVF. So she said, she was like, if you can just give it a go, just mentally process that you might have more miscarriages, but the law of averages will have a live baby at some point.
Okay.
And then we just went, right, we've got to do this. And again, a little bit, were we probably thinking, okay, we'll give this one last shout.
Mm.
And we did. And it worked. And this is where I sort of realized how amazing my wife was, you know.
Yeah, because
I'd lived through this support role, but then I'd only the last few really been completely in it. Obviously, she's completely invested. She'd done every bit of research. She'd done everything she possibly could. You know, she didn't drink for like 5 years, I think. Didn't have any alcohol. Didn't like.
Well, her body's been through.
Oh yeah, she's been through so much.
Ridiculous amount. You know, this all took place in the same kind of space of 6-7 years.
Yeah, exactly. We were just. I mean, we had the odd break in between when we couldn't process it or. One of the things she also had along the journey is she got some, they found some cancer cells on her cervix, so she had to have those burnt off as part of the process. So she couldn't
burnt off.
Yeah, you actually have, if you've got cancer cells on your cervix, they literally physically burn them off, and which then meant she'd got a slightly shortened cervix.
Okay,
which then part of the pregnancy with Rory, which she had to have a surgical stitch, and there was loads of. Yeah, we speak for hours about different things. But the thing that I'll sort of come back to is the way that she was able to sort of continue to sort of mentally continue. And I think her strength, then it was unbelievable. And I don't think that's, you can't, us as like the men, you know, you can't process it. It's not our bodies. And definitely it's tough for us because you're not going through it. So it's hard to be that one supporting. But then, how they manage to do it, and they've got to go through this and got to injections. You've got to literally have a baby inside you, and then you lose that baby. You know, there's so many things about where people don't know about miscarriages, and that way you don't talk to people about it because you're scared of losing the baby.
One bit which stuck with me was when you mentioned when you had to deliver the news to Paula and her reaction to you, and how honest you've been about it, and. Obviously, without meeting her, just to imagine that scenario and the place that you were in and that conversation you have. I'm assuming there has been times when those roles at some point would have flipped and you...
Absolutely. Yeah. She's had troubles herself and we've had to support each other.
Yeah.
Definitely. She's suffered with anxiety, you know, a little bit of depression it's been such a hard journey for her, and she's got some really really close friends that she sort of managed to confide in. Just like our dog, Max, was like, she calls him her best friend, because literally just going and taking the dog for a walk. And she would go, she'd got two friends that she'd go walking with each morning. And then she'd have an hour every morning just having a chat, you know, just talking about things, just talking about it. And again, she'll say that hour of the day sort of saved her taking the dog for a walk.
It's routine as well, isn't it? Because we need structure, we need routine. Otherwise, we just wither away and need that. Was, to get onto the book then that your wife has wrote, which you've brought in, was that part of this journey?
Yeah.
Of her healing?
So she just decided that, and I think it was part of her healing.
Had she ever expressed an idea to write a book before? Anything? Was it something she was...
No, not really.
Okay.
She's not a writer particularly. She had documented it because she wanted to remember it. And if we ever had a successful pregnancy, probably to be able to tell our child, you know, a little bit about what we've been through.
So what's the book called?
So the book's called From Heartache to Hope.
Sorry, can you say that again without Matt clearing his throat? So I can keep...
From Heartache to Hope. And she's sort of called it Our Story of Love, Loss, Fight for a Family Beneath the Surface.
And this is available publicly?
Yeah. So
I'll put a link to where you can get it in the description.
Yeah, it's available. I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but at the moment it's released on the 20th of March of when it's actually going to be the print version. And the ebook is available now.
So it's available today?
Yeah.
Link will be in the description if you'd like to grab yourself a copy.
And the most important thing that Paula, you know, again, has drilled into me to make sure is...
drilled into you.
Yeah. She's done this for other people. This is not a massive money-making exercise. It's about telling our journey.
Sorry, I do have to stop you. It's interesting that that's like one of the first things you mentioned about it, because we live in that society now, isn't it, where everyone's so judgy. It's like, well, they're clearly just trying to cash in on something.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, I mean, it's probably not going to make you a millionaire, is it?
So, no, but you can contribute to my IVF Just Giving page. You know, but
people are so cynical, aren't they? Yeah.
And Stone Sense, as I might have mentioned before, does like...
What does it say on the front of the book now? Underneath the title is a little...
Yes, that's what I mentioned. It's a story of love, loss, and fight for a family beneath the surface. And she started it as a journal, you know, just mapping out as we went through the stages of the different losses that we're experiencing, and talking about going through IVF. And what's involved with that. And then also mentioning some of the support network, and talks about the work that she did with and help we got from Lily May, from, you know, acupuncture, from the different hospitals, people in the hospitals. But really just as a raw emotion for people that are going through the same journey. So you've got something to read that is sort of like, well, people can sympathise with it, you know, that it's her story, but it's a very relatable story. Like just now, we're talking about very similar things that you just don't talk about, because for me, I found it far too hard to talk about, and I couldn't talk to people properly. And
how did you find it reading it? Because it's your wife's story, but it's also your story through your wife's words.
Yeah. It was emotional. You know, you're in tears throughout
Was it hard to read? Is that a silly question for me to ask?
Don't get me wrong, we've opened up to each other quite a lot now.
Yeah. Did you learn anything about yourself in there? Sorry, I'll stop butting in a second. Did you learn anything about yourself in there that you didn't realise until you read it?
I mean, obviously that I'm an amazing husband, that I'm...
good luck, good, an- good
know,
answer.
You know, that you know, you guys have got a lot to live up to. No. What you do find with all of these sorts of things, in a marriage... that if you can survive this and understand the love that you have from your wife through loss, and where, like, I'm sure you hear a lot of it on that you've dealt with different people, is, you know, loss, a lot of brand relationships break up, you know, it's, and you sort of realise that we're a team.
Yeah.
And this is what, and you know, Paula talks about it quite a lot.
You're probably a whole different couple to what the couple that you were before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, it evolves over time anyway, but because of, as a direct consequence of everything you've been through.
Yeah, definitely. And you realise sort of, you know, why we're together, why she loves me, you know. We are quite different on paper, but actually we're perfect together, you know, and and the fact of that we're able to go, and you know, we get it a lot where people are like, you know, you're such an amazing couple, and we're like, we're not anything special, you know, we still argue.
And then when you're in the car, just the two of you on the way back, you go, yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. I wouldn't be doing my job really if I didn't bring Matt in, because I'm not sure if you know, but Matt's also writing his book, which is due out before I won't be able to hold it together for too long before Ryan and I start taking the piss. But so before that, because it is, on a serious note, I really can't wait to read it, and it's been a work in progress, but is it still on track to be come out this year?
Yeah, it's hopefully by our birthday, but it will be this year.
For anyone who hasn't heard about it before, I think that the format as well for the style of the book, if you want to tell everyone, because I think it's such a great idea.
Yeah, I was saying to Sam, it was just, I've written it from a point of view of telling Callie, it's like me telling her the story of her life and the journey that we've been on, and it's like a bedtime story in a sense. I've written it from an angle of, you know, all the people in it I'm daddy, Crystal's mummy, and I'm talking to her. That's how I've written it.
So, I think that's a lovely way of doing it, to be fair.
Are you taking the same approach with your book as Matt is? Because Matt is, we asked him about the book and the clip I'm playing.
When I wrote, so I've got an introduction followed by the chapters.
And it's my favourite, Matt. And my other favourite quote from Matt is the guy who's got to edit it.
And now he's kind of, he's edited it.
Right, okay.
But he hasn't edited it, so it's not what I've written.
Like quite the author that. Then.
I love, yeah.
Absolutely, do you get, mate, yeah. Do you get free crayons with your book?
Look at this guy.
It is. So I'm assuming yours.
You get one. So, one per copy.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean,
so you've got the intro followed by the chapters. That's all I'm asking.
No, I got my wife to do it for me.
Right.
No, I think it's great. I think it's so good. And I think it's I think from my point of view, and I'm sure from Paula's and your point of view, and why you've come in here, it's spreading awareness as well, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it's about for me. It's about spreading awareness of the subject of what people go through. Yeah, it's reality, isn't it?
It is reality, and it's just loss. It's just there. And it's such a hard thing to speak about.
Yeah.
Do you speak about it much?
We do. I mean, we talk and we openly talk about Toby and Offer and refer to them.
Yeah, okay.
You know? And I think a little bit, unfortunately, it did define us. And I think one of the things that I really noticed with Paula was she got a couple of her really close friends had had babies. One of her close friends had had two babies in the period of time that we'd been trying.
All over the social media.
All over social media. And she just, and she got family members that had had a baby. And we were like, look, we're really pleased for you in there. But she was like, I just can't be in the room with you. Yeah. I'm really sorry, but I just can't.
Completely understand.
Yeah. And it's like, I wish all the best, you know, sending presents and that, but I just can't be there. And then she's really like lost touch with some friends. And then she became in this
Matt
world
and Ryan are nodding.
Where you're like, she just got her close-knit people. And she's got a friend who got a 16-year-old daughter, a friend Kaz, who's one of our neighbours. And they became so close because her daughter's a bit older, you know. And then her other friend Sue, who's a little bit older as well. And whereas her other friends, who were all sort of going through the same journey that we were, completely lost touch. Mm. And now I think back, I'm like, that must have been so hard. You know, fortunately, I was, because I'd already got two children and I was not processing it in the same manner, then I was okay. And to be honest, a little bit, I was like, I didn't think about it as much as what I should and thought, how hard is this going to be? And like, there was a couple of circumstances where there was like family occasions that we didn't go to. And she was like, come on. I was like, it'll be all right. You know, we don't need to talk to them. We'll be in the corner. Paula was like, no, I just can't go. And I'd be like, you really probably need to.
I was, it's a delicate one, that, isn't it?
Because, and I was like, you know, it's a close, I think one of them was like a stepsister's birthday. And it was like, you know, quite a big birthday, and we didn't go. And then it was like, and some of the family didn't know what we'd been going through.
So they got their...
Yeah, would have just seen it as, oh, she's not.
They'll come to their own conclusions.
Yeah, exactly. And that I think, was...
I always knew this about them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think the difficult thing with friends as well is that you learn very quickly who are friends and who are acquaintances and the ones that are always going to be there with you.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, with a lot of people that I've spoken to, they say it's always the ones that they would never have expected to be the one who shows absolutely. That support and what have you.
To be fair, I would just say on that point, Ryan, because again, I'll get told off about this.
Okay.
The friends of Paula's, to be fair, that they were very supportive.
That's not what you said at the beginning.
I was like, this could go really wrong for me here. You know, I'm forgetting how long we've been.
He's got all his disclaimers. He's got all his disclaimers in, hasn't he, today?
Generally. Yeah, so it's like, even you can have the most amount of support from some friends.
Yeah.
But you just can't be around them. But then, true, there are other people that they either don't know or they just have completely no understanding of what loss is like. And they're come on. You know, it's almost like it's like oh, you broke your leg, you must have recovered from that.
I was just about to say I think they get fatigued with the fact that they have a friend or a family member who is suffering with, you know, whatever it may be, miscarriage.
Fatigue, isn't it?
It's empathy fatigue, and I think people get to a point because they're not living that daily as their life.
Yeah.
So they have no understanding of the journey, the everything that you're going on.
Like, I almost feel like this was us as a couple.
Yeah.
Like, literally, we were the couple in our friendship group and our families that just didn't have a baby together. They'd lost loads of babies, and it was a bit of a, oh, we can't really talk about babies, or we can't, you know, we
said it yourself, innit? Like, it defined you.
Now,
like, yeah.
And you almost like, you didn't want them to.
No.
But then also, it was a little bit like, oh, they're obviously not talking about such and such.
Yeah.
And then it becomes that was us.
Yeah.
And it was, it's such a hard thing to do. And I, you know, I think this podcast is great because it's just openly honest talking about things.
Mm.
Along daily life, you know, bit of
what you've said brings us back to pretty much the reason and the title of our first ever episode, which unfortunately is terrible sound quality. The link, you can listen to it back of it. It's in the description, which is mad. It's five years ago now, and it was called The Elephant in the Room, and that whole episode was more or less based around that. Because sometimes you're trying to sense when you know someone, actually, don't leave them today. Or maybe, like, today's the day I might try and push for, offer that I'm there. Or even just say something stupid, just to say something stupid. That was the elephant in the room, was all of those different things. Exactly what it is that you just said. And also, how you feel around it. Because on one side, I'm assuming you don't want to be known as that couple within your group.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, don't tread on eggshells around us kind of mentality.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can say it's like someone that's got cancer.
See, I struggle just to say it then.
Yeah. It's like say someone who's got cancer or something. Mm. You know, do we talk about it? Do we not talk about it? Do they want to know about it? Do they want? And it's all those sorts of conscious things. And I think what you learn is that you're quite happy to talk about it. But then if you don't want to talk about it, you'll bring it up.
Yeah.
Even now, I don't know how you two are like with regards to when somebody asks how many children you've got.
Mm.
You know, and like they kept saying to Paula, is this your first pregnancy?
Mm.
And she'd be like, well, it's my first live pregnancy. Mm. Within hospitals, you think they'd read notes a little bit sometimes.
No, it's too easy. It's too easy. That is
exactly.
Simple, isn't it? That?
But even now, I don't know. Like, what? How do you answer that question? Because I
always say I've got 5 kids.
Yeah.
I say I've got four living children and one that sadly died.
Yeah.
I answer 2.
Yeah.
I say that too, but it's taking time sometimes to get there.
Yeah.
Not straight away.
Because the problem is you enter into the conversation and they're like, oh, well, I've only seen one.
I think it's a time thing.
I like watching people squirm.
Yeah. Yeah, sadly, Callie.
It's like you look at their face and it's like, it's a, oh shit, what am I going to say now? Sort of thing.
You're right. You'll walk into the curry house around the corner before he's even, he went, hi, I've got 5 kids. Also, can I have a biryani? Well, I just wanted to tell you that. and by the way, yeah, one of them's not here.
Yeah.
Hurry up with the food. Feel awkward.
No, it's true though, but it does. Yeah. You do. Like,
so I love that though.
Sadly, one passed away and then they go like, oh,
Yeah, it's like they're
hop around, baby. Hop.
Yeah, they get Tourette's very quickly, wouldn't you say? Something like that. And for me, I'm just a nasty bastard, really.
But no,
is this why you're a counsellor?
But that's the thing. I think with a slight, maybe just a slight deviation, the potential maybe, but I like your bluntness, but you've got such a big heart with the bluntness. They marry together so well. And he hates compliments. Look how awkward he looks now.
I don't like that.
He absolutely hates it. How do you feel? I always ask this at the end of the show, because it's obviously it's that club that you don't want to be a part of, as we always say, and a conversation which can never be easy. But how do you feel at the end of it?
Talking is absolutely the most important thing about anything. And
it really is.
Like, genuinely, I struggled to say Toby's name. I used to, I think I was touching on earlier, I had an album on my phone of the pictures that we took with the Lily May box.
Yeah.
And I couldn't open it. I literally couldn't open it to look at it.
Yeah.
And then it was only when we had Rory where I could actually process and could open it.
Wow.
And it's like, when you think about that, I was like, what was I locking up inside there? That it's taken me that long, that many losses, to then have a look.
Yeah, was it fear of opening up to it, like just letting it in?
There's no right or wrong answer, though, to that. No.
I genuinely don't know, because he's still my son, and same with Oliver. I don't know. I suppose I was scared of crying, scared of the emotion, and I don't know. I'm the chief of all bottle it up, people. So that's what I used to do. And then now it's like, it's just this sort of weight where you're just like, I'm quite happy to talk about it. And I think, well, who else is, there must be so many people who are going through this sort of thing. And even before, and how you do that and talk about it. I would have never, ever thought about it, speaking to a counsellor or going and talking about your feelings, sitting around with your mates and talking about this sort of thing, like when you're in the pub or when you're playing golf and like, I know, like, like now mental health's all about, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
But, I was just, everybody's talking about it. Of course they're talking about it, but I'm not going to talk about it.
But it's a thing, isn't it? I just don't like, when people use it as an excuse and rather just like, you've just had a tough day. Everyone has a tough day. You need to have some kind of a robustness about you, but it's did mental. That's completely and that's the thing. And it is a conversation that needs to be had. I just think the argument gets weakened by knobheads using it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's what it is for me.
Yeah, I think it's just normalising it.
100%.
It's seeing other people, like, it's funny, like when I met you two and I was sort of like, play football, play golf, do all that, and you're just like, oh, they're just the same sort of guys,
Yeah.
And I remember sitting around in the changing rooms of one of the football matches, just thinking, well, they're all just the same sort of people. You almost sort of put a label on that you're just going to be sitting around as quivering wrecks in the corner. just sat there all crying your eyes out,
Yeah.
But no, we're all, you're invested and you're doing something fun, but actually we're on the same journey. Might be one of you might go, oh, what was your journey? And how are your things? And it was funny, actually, because I think his name was Chris. There was somebody I met on the football. And I remember that we had dinner with them, another couple, and then we became friends with them. And then they had a baby. And then they genuinely, we didn't get in touch with them, but I think they felt it was awkward to get in touch with us.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because they were like, oh, almost, and I feel like it was like they were like, oh, we can't be part of the charity anymore. It's almost like we've graduated. And it was like...
I can't think of who that is.
Because he did... I actually saw him on the London Landmarks half marathon that we did, like I did 2 years ago. I think it
was Chris. Oh, Chris Watson.
Chris. Yeah, yeah. That's
Chris
him.
And
Chris and Kiri.
Chris and Kiri. Yeah, yeah, that's them. Yeah. And because we met them on, I think it was one of your events, or we met them through something. They came round to dinner. We got quite good friends with them. It's really nice sharing stories. And then they had a baby.
Yeah.
And then I think they genuinely were like, well, we don't know whether we can keep in touch. And there's nothing wrong with them. They were absolutely great with it.
They've had another baby, don't you?
No, I didn't.
They've had another baby as well.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's, again, a sort of similar example of, you like, people that have been through the same journey, yeah, and then we're like, oh, well, we don't know actually whether they want to speak, yeah, to us or not. And Chris, if you do listen to this, you're amazing. I would love to see you again.
That's not what you said at the beginning.
Weren't amazing at football, though. I do remember that.
If you do speak to Chris Watson again anytime soon, ask him if he remembers any of the Reminisce Festival.
Okay.
Yeah, because he...
I don't think he probably does.
I've never seen...
He went missing for about 4 hours.
Ironic in the title, right, the Reminisce Festival.
Yeah. He was absolute carnage.
You know when you see someone really drunk for the first time? Because I don't know Chris as well as these two, but I know him well enough. He's been on the show a few times. And
oh, has he?
Yeah. He's done a few episodes. He's done an episode with Kiri.
Was he slagging me off?
Valentine's special. Yeah, the episode was called Sam's a Knobhead.
Yeah.
But so Reminisce Fest. So the radio station I work for is they do an old school festival up near Liverpool called Reminisce. It's just old school music.
Oh,
but
brilliant.
Some of it's got a bit of a Scouse twist. So there's it's not my scene in particular, this particular tent Chris goes to choose to go in, but it suits the story perfectly. Because you imagine the hardest Euro trancy housey bullshit ever. Yeah. And we're like, where's Chris gone? And Curry's like, where's Chris? We haven't seen him for ages. So obviously I'm working for the festival, so I got back and get on the stage and just see him. It's the Bounce Back Arena, it's called. It's the second biggest one on site. It holds about 6,000 people in this one. And he's there on his own. Because I'm just nipping away for a minute. Because we've been there the whole day, and he's just skanking away on this on his own, swinging his top around. I'm like, he's possessed.
Yeah.
It was amazing. How are you feeling in general now? Where are you at in your head?
Great.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's the cliche of what we were just talking about, the fact that we've now had a baby.
Yeah.
And it's something that, particularly within the book, what Paula said is, it's not something she wanted to really sort of talk about in her book, because she didn't want almost like to say, I'm writing the book and here's the perfect ending.
Yeah, okay.
It's not that reality. And genuinely, we thought it wasn't going to get there. So in her book, it stops. You know, I don't want to give away the...
No spoilers.
Exactly. But it's about that. We are lucky. We're amazingly lucky. We don't look that we've been through. We were unlucky. We're lucky, that we got this stage to get here. But now we've got Rory, and he's amazing.
Brilliant.
And so how do I feel? I feel lucky to be in this situation. Really.
Good on you, man.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Excellent.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. We hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Dust off them boots. Get you back on the pitch.
Yeah, that's it. We'll get pitch. Out there.
Do a 10-minute cameo.
Yeah, this is it.
Bring you on for the pens.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Specialist penalty take.
They'll bring me on to take Matt to hospital. So next time he breaks a nail. Sam, thank you very much for joining us. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Globals Make Some Noise. Details about things that we mentioned on this particular episode, you can find all of those in the description, along with a link for the book that Sam's mentioned, written by his wife Paula, From Heartache to Hope. You can find that by clicking on the link. Take care, everyone, and we'll be back very, very soon. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Cheers, Ryan. Cheers, Matt.
Bye.
See you guys.
In a bit.
Cheers.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.